It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. The sound of protesters from both sides of the abortion debate making their presence felt outside of the United States Supreme Court building this morning over the court's expected ruling on the landmark Roe v. Wade decision, which has made legal abortion the law of the land for over a half century. A leaked draft opinion has most observers expecting the court to overturn that decision. That could come as soon as today.
We've had violence from Antifa, or I'm told it was anarchists or whatever, across this country over the last 2 years. We have the FBI who doesn't categorize Antifa. And so I want to know where Homeland Security is on this. Where's the FBI? What are we doing to protect the justices? What are we doing to protect this institution? What are we going to do to protect the American people?
Republican lawmaker Nancy Mace. There were more protesters outside of the homes of Supreme Court justices over the weekend, this time Justice Clarence Thomas the target. While protests outside the court itself are legal, protests outside the justices' homes are not, although they have been overtly encouraged by the Biden administration. Federal Judge Esther Salas, who's been the object of death threats and whose son was killed by protesters in a targeted attack in 2020, says the House of Representatives needs to stop dragging its feet on enhancing protections for justices.
Already one judge is dead, assassinated just a few days before Judge Kavanaugh's horrific incident. How many more judges have to die? How many more people have to lose their lives because we're not doing a common sense thing?
Salas referring there to retired Wisconsin Judge John Romer, who was murdered in his home a week ago in a targeted attack. The high court still has over two dozen decisions to release before going on summer break. One pro-life supporter is urging Christians to get ahead of abortion by tackling the root causes.
The church has to address these issues, so we don't even get to the place where someone makes the tragic decision of abortion in the first place. We uphold marriage. We uphold, you know, restraint.
Ryan Bomberger heads up the Radiance Foundation.
When it comes to sex, unfortunately, our young are told, and people are told in general, that, you know, just go with it, just go with it. Well, there are always consequences to just going with it.
He's also urging more support for pregnancy care centers. The House committee investigating last year's attack on the Capitol holding a second public hearing this morning.
We're going to take a close look at the first part of Trump's attack on the rule of law.
Democrat Benny Thompson. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says Democrats running the show have an ulterior motive.
And they're talking about their real outcome of what they want to achieve, abolish the Electoral College.
Former President Trump's campaign manager will not be testifying as scheduled due to a family emergency. The committee holding a series of these hearings all through the month. A deal on a framework to reduce gun violence unveiled by a bipartisan group of senators. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns.
The proposal includes enhanced background checks for gun buyers under 21, incentives for states to implement red flag laws, and funding for mental health services.
President Biden quickly praising the proposal, saying if passed, it would be the most significant gun safety legislation in Congress in decades. The bipartisan group of senators involved in those negotiations included 10 Republicans. How can parents and teachers reassure children in the aftermath of tragedies such as the recent school shooting in Uvalde, Texas? Family Life's Greg Gillespie with more.
The biggest tip? Open and honest communication. That from a fact sheet made available through the Presbyterian Church. Start by asking what your child has heard and what they think about it. Listen to them without rushing to try to make it better. Tell the truth, but base the amount of your information on the child's age, maturity, and personality. Say that even though big events like this are covered in the media, they are very rare. Reestablish a routine as quickly as possible. Cigna says keeping your child home from school likely only increases anxiety when it is time to return. Physical closeness can help to restore a sense of comfort and security. Give your child extra undivided attention and extra hugs. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
Now to inflation. It's still up there, so are gas prices, and that's here to stay for the time being, according to former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers.
I think the optimists were wrong a year ago in saying we'd have no inflation, and I think they're wrong now if anyone's highly confident that we're going to avoid recession.
Summers appearing on CNN's State of the Union over the weekend. Gas prices aren't going up though, for the first time in weeks, AAA finds the national average price for a regular is holding at $5.01 a gallon right now. It's still the highest ever. Pennsylvania's average gas price just about mirrors the national average. New York State is a bit higher, though, at $5.04 a gallon. Despite the continuing high prices, drivers are still driving.
For all the complaints that there are out there about gas prices hitting records, few Americans seem to be cutting back much.
That's Gas Buddies' Patrick DeHaan. Fox News business analyst Stuart Varney says anger over the bad economy is focused squarely on President Biden.
Because he has no plan. Middle America's getting hit. Low-income America's getting hit. Investors are getting hit. Everybody's getting hit, and he's going to take the blame.
How comfortable are Democrats with the thought of President Biden running for re-election in 2024? Speaking on CNN this weekend, AOC was asked a direct question about whether she'd support Biden 2024. She didn't exactly give a direct answer.
You know, I think we should endorse when we get to it. But I believe that the president has been doing a very good job so far. And, you know, should he run again? I think that I think we'll take a look at.
Sheila Huggins, a Democratic National Committee member from North Carolina, wasn't so ambiguous. She says her party needs, quote, fresh, bold leadership for 2024, and that can't be Joe Biden. A newly released aggregate of the latest polls shows President Biden's disapproval rating at an all-time high of 53.6%. While the president might not be hot right now, more record-high temperatures are expected in much of the country today as an early-season heat wave makes its way east. Meteorologist David Parkinson.
Some of the high temperatures, including 101 degrees in Dallas, in Austin, and San Antonio, all of those are record. Most Texas cities have been at the century mark.
Just ahead, our meteorologist, Kevin Williams, will let us know how much of that heat might make its way to us. Still to come, though, on the Noon Report, a riot inside a Pennsylvania hospital. New York GOP candidates for governor face off, and the birds are back.
Well, good afternoon to all. It's a serene weather scene across our region now. How long does that hold? We'll check forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Now checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. There was a heavy police presence Saturday night at a hospital in northeastern Pennsylvania, a situation described by the Luzerne County District Attorney as a full-blown riot. WBRE reports that an altercation involving juveniles broke out inside First Hospital in Kingston. Police were called when the situation escalated. Kingston police responded with backup from neighboring departments, state police, and the DA's office. Several EMS vehicles surrounded the area, and then what appeared to be two juveniles were taken away in handcuffs. Investigators say there were five people transported to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries, two of them staff members. Investigators report there was also significant damage done to the inside of the hospital. Pennsylvania is the only state in the nation where local police departments aren't allowed to use radar to catch speeders. Only state police are authorized to do that. However, that would change under House Bill 606, which would okay local departments using radar once their municipality approves. Supporters say it's all about saving lives, noting that nationally, speeding-related crash fatalities rose 5% from 2020 to 2021. Detractors say the bill will just give cops more reasons to pull people over and issue tickets to line government coffers. Jim Nowak, head of the State Mayor's Association, tells WHTM that revenue has nothing to do with it.
Police officers are trained to enforce the law. They're not trained to raise revenue. Raising revenue is up to legislative bodies, not executive bodies, not law enforcement bodies.
Police agencies from around the state rallied in Harrisburg in support of the measure. Organizers of the Pennsylvania Firefly Festival are urging residents to turn off outdoor lights this month. The Lights Out for Lightning Bugs campaign runs through June 25th. Biologists say artificial lighting disrupts the bugs' mating rituals, leading to smaller populations each year. Firefly expert Laura Faust encourages Pennsylvania residents to enjoy the state's many showy species. That's a big boy, and we don't mean hamburger. A big weekend for rail fans in Scranton as the Steamtown National Historic Site held a ribbon cutting to officially welcome back one of its top exhibits, the Union Pacific Big Boy steam engine. The gleaming black engine was back on display after undergoing a $1.6 million restoration, which began in 2019. The work focused on removing asbestos, then giving the big boy a big paint job, using automotive paint to help it weather life as a permanent outdoor display. They also hid some solar panels on the roof, so the front lights of the engine will remain lit at night. Including Steamtown's Big Boy, there are only eight such trains left in the U.S. Four Republican candidates who are hoping to become New York's next governor will be taking part in a debate tonight. Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin, former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, Andrew Giuliani, and businessman Harry Wilson to discuss key issues during the debate, which is being hosted by WCBS-TV in New York. According to the New York Post, polls show Giuliani and Zeldin locked in a close battle to secure their party's nomination. Primary day set for June 28th. The latest in a slew of threats against area schools took place Friday afternoon in Hornell when city police were tipped off to a social media threat involving Hornell High School. Several law enforcement agencies responded to the school to beef up security. Investigators say the alleged threat was traced back to a 14-year-old Seneca County resident. After questioning, he was taken to St. James Hospital for evaluation, then to family court on several charges. A police investigation continues. Usually, mail carriers and dogs go together about as well as oil and vinegar, but a postal worker in Olean, New York, is an exception to that rule. Military vet Dwayne Jensen has a service dog through the organization Western New York Heroes and is now going through a trial run of having his four-legged companion, Bo, accompany him on his mail route. He tells WKBW-TV, so far, so good.
We went through a long process with the post office because it's never been done. You know, our motto is stay away from dogs, and here we, you know, I have a service dog, so we all agreed, and we're given a time trial for 30 days, and everything's going great.
The Olean Post Office could be the first in the nation to have a carrier with a service dog. A Binghamton landmark is headed to the auction block this month. The former Crowley Milk Plant, a familiar sight to generations, perched on the banks of the Susquehanna River, built around 1907, churned out dairy products until 2014 when its parent company, H.P. Hood, relocated operations. The brick structure was recently foreclosed upon and is in arrears to the Broome County Industrial Development Agency for nearly $250,000. It's expected the IDA will take control of the building at auction and then in hopes of reselling it to another dairy operation. Some say all's fair in love and politics. Well, perhaps that's apropos for what happened last week in Horseheads. WETM reports that Chemung County Legislature candidate Francis Freeman was caught on camera pulling out his opponent's lawn signs in broad daylight. Freeman admits, yeah, it was him, but says he was justified because his opponent, Brent Tarantino, didn't have permission from the landowner to post his signs there. Tarantino says that's a lie and that he has direct permission from the property owner to post his signs as well. The Chemung County Sheriff's Office says it wants nothing to do with the dispute since knocking down a campaign sign is not a criminal offense. Tarantino says Freeman was caught lying, adding that, quote, you never touch someone else's signs. Those are the rules. Well, voters will get the final say on who will win that Republican primary for the county legislature. You may recall that a couple of months ago, many zoos and animal farms pulled their bird displays due to an outbreak of avian influenza. Well, bird flu outbreak seems to be abating now, and that means the bird displays are returning. Jordan Patch owns Animal Adventure Park near Binghamton. He tells WICZ.
We work extremely close with our veterinarians and also state officials, and based on the data and their recommendations, we went into protocols for protection, and then we were able to lift them.
The recent strain of avian influenza named H5N1 is highly infectious and deadly to birds, particularly poultry. However, the state recently lifted its precautionary ban on live poultry shows. Speaking of birds, in Wayne County, a SOTUS man has been arrested for the third time in the past 2 weeks for taking bird feeding to the extreme. Police say 71-year-old Donald Antal keeps violating a local ordinance which says that the most bird feeders allowed per household is 2, and those have to be 5 feet off the ground. Instead, they say Antal has placed up to 20 feeding trays filled with bird seed and peanuts in his yard. He's due in SOTUS Town Court to answer to the allegedly banned bird banquet. And a New York State Department of Environmental Conservation officer was in the right place at the right time to rescue a kitten with a potentially deadly dilemma. The DEC says Officer Darcy Doherty was driving in the Chautauqua County town of Ellery late one night recently when she saw something weird out in the middle of the road. It turned out to be a kitten with a plastic drink cup lid stuck around its neck. Doherty was able to get the stuck cat to a safer place and then free it up from the life-threatening lid. DEC says it's a good reminder to properly dispose of garbage. They also report that the kitten has since been adopted. All right, let's turn to Randy now to check of sports.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Mark, we begin in baseball. The win streak is over for the Philadelphia Phillies, and it ended quite emphatically, 13-1, losing to Arizona. The Phils lost for the first time since May 31st. The 9-game win streak is over. They now stand at 30-30 on the season. The Pirates are swept in Atlanta. Brian Reynolds hit a home run for Pittsburgh, but it wasn't enough as the Braves won this one 5-3. The Bucks have now lost six in a row. Taiwan Walker struck out 10 over six innings of work, and the Mets beat the Angels in Anaheim 4-1. Both Pete Alonso and J.D. Davis hit solo home runs in the victory. Other National League winners, the Brewers, Reds, Giants, and Rockies. The Yankees clobbered the Cubs 18-4. Both Matt Carpenter and Kyle Higashioka hit a pair of home runs. Carpenter ended up driving in seven for the game as the Yanks rolled. New Yorkers now have and still have the best record in the bigs at 44-16. Elsewhere in the American League, Cleveland, Toronto, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, Texas, Boston, and Houston all won their games. In NASCAR, Daniel Suarez became the first Mexican-born driver to win a NASCAR Cup Series race as he held off Chris Buescher at Sonora. Michael McDowell came in third. And Game 5 of the NBA Finals resumes tonight in San Francisco. It'll be a pivotal game as both the Celtics and the Warriors are tied up at two games apiece. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report, the latest from Ukraine. What's up with that autopilot feature on Teslas? And we'll have a health update on a popular country music star.
Jesus offered a dire warning against anyone who would cause harm to children. This woman took that charge to heart. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Mary Slessor was born to a Scottish working family in 1848. At an early age, Mary joined her parents in the Dundee Mills, working half a day while going to school the other half of the day. Mary's mother, a devout Presbyterian with a strong interest in missions, made sure that her children were raised in the Christian faith. When a local mission to the poor opened in Dundee, Mary volunteered to be a teacher. Her sense of humor and her sympathy made her very popular with her students. At age 27, Mary learned of the death of famous missionary David Livingstone. She was inspired to join her church's mission in what is now southern Nigeria and taught and worked in the dispensary. Her devotion to the local language, plus cutting her hair and abandoning the traditional Victorian dress as impractical in the hot African climate, Mary quickly set herself apart from the other missionaries. Finding the mission hierarchy frustrating, she welcomed any opportunity she could get to go upriver into the inland areas. The need for workers in these regions that had fewer missionaries was significant, so she asked to be stationed there. However, since male missionaries had been killed in those areas, her request, as a single woman, was turned down. Too dangerous. After a medical furlough because of malaria, Mary was stationed in a region where shamans dominated much of life. These men conducted trials in which guilt or innocence was determined by whether or not the accused would die after taking poison. And we should add, women's rights were virtually non-existent. Despite all of these challenges, Mary was somehow able to integrate into the community, earn the trust of the local people. As a woman, she was not perceived to be the same kind of threat that male missionaries were. And her ability to speak the local language, not to mention her embrace of local lifestyles and clothing, housing, and food, endeared her to the native people. It was in Okyong that Mary began the work for which she is now best known. The locals believed that whenever twins were born, one of them must be the child of a demon, so the mothers were ostracized. And since there was no way to tell which one of the children were cursed, both children would be abandoned to death by starvation or wild animals. Just like the earliest Christians who would go and rescue the victims of attempted infanticide by exposure, Mary began rescuing the twins that she could. She saved hundreds of children, and against the advice of her mission agency, she even adopted nine of them as her own. And just like those early Christians whose example she emulated, the actions of Mary Slessor not only saved lives, but eventually played a major role in changing the culture there. her understanding of language, history, and customs, plus her strong standing in the community enabled her to work as a mediator and to give judgments in local tribal courts. When the British later attempted to set up a court system in the area, Mary warned them that it would just be a disaster. So the British consul appointed Mary as vice consul in Okyong, making her the first female magistrate in all of the British Empire. In this position, Mary continued to mediate disputes, acting as a liaison with the colonial government while continuing her work as a missionary. At the age of 66, Mary Slessor finally lost a long fight with malaria. She was given a state funeral, which was attended by many people who traveled from all around from various tribal regions in order to honor her life. She was even nicknamed the Queen of Okyong. Mary Slessor's story is a wonderful part of the larger ongoing story of restoration accomplished by Christ through his people in the time and place they were called. And Slessor offers yet another example for all Christ followers that taking the gospel to pagan cultures will typically involve the call to protect children. Our calling in our cultural moment is no different than Mary Slessor's. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Alrighty, now let's check in for the first time with meteorologist Kevin Williams.
For this afternoon, sunshine, scattered clouds, and pleasant, behind the 70s and low 80s. For tonight, partly moonlit, but a cluster of heavy thunderstorms and showers will move across the region overnight from southwest New York into western and central Pennsylvania. Low temps, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, sunshine returns, high temps 70s and low 80s. We're well in the 80s to near 90 on Wednesday with some sunshine, some humidity as well.
All right, thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you again for joining us. A pivotal moment in the battle for Ukraine, as intense fighting in a strategically important eastern city could determine the invasion's ultimate outcome. We get the latest now from CBS's Chris Lucey.
Ukraine's forces are now locked in close-quarter battles in the city of Severodonetsk. Lose it, and they lose the region of Luhansk. But further south, Ukraine is clawing back territory. These towns in the Kherson region had been under Russian occupation since the start of the war. Today, they're once again free for those alive to see it. These are lives that could have been saved, says President Zelensky, begging the West to deliver the weapons it's promised. Did we get them? No.
Zelensky says Russia could lose more than 40,000 soldiers by the end of the month. He says the Russian army is trying to deploy reserve troops in eastern Ukraine. Says Zelensky, it seems they'll throw poorly trained conscripts into battle. He said Russian generals consider their people simply as cannon fodder, which they need to ensure that they outnumber Ukrainian forces in military personnel and equipment. The Pentagon chief says his meeting with the Chinese defense minister will help build communication lines between the two militaries. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin meeting with his Chinese counterpart at a security summit in Singapore.
So our policy hasn't changed. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be true for the PRC. We've witnessed a steady increase in provocative and destabilizing military activity near Taiwan. And that includes PLA aircraft flying near Taiwan in record numbers in recent months, and nearly on a daily basis.
The two met for almost an hour, with each holding to their viewpoint on Taiwan's right to self-rule. Starting today, the Navy pausing all aircraft units that aren't deployed so it can conduct a safety screening following three crashes in Southern California this month.
This will be a one-day safety pause for non-deployed aircraft to give the Navy and the Marines an opportunity to review safety training. It comes after a pair of crashes in California last week. One killed five Marines. Deployed units will conduct the safety pause at their earliest possible opportunity.
Cammy McCormick reporting. A wildfire that started Sunday morning in northern Arizona has now burned at least 4,500 acres, and they have a suspect in custody. Here's more from Trey Thomas.
The pipeline fire started around 10:15 a.m. Sunday near Flagstaff, about 140 miles north of Phoenix. Forest Service officers arrested a 57-year-old man after stopping a pickup truck seen leaving the area where the fire started. 270 firefighters are working to contain the blaze that's getting a boost from hot, windy conditions. I'm Trey Thomas.
Federal regulators are wrapping up an investigation into the autopilot function on Tesla cars. Brad Siegel has that story.
This after more than a dozen cars crashed into parked first responder vehicles. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced it's upgrading the investigation it launched last summer to an engineering analysis. That's the level of investigation taken before it's determined if a recall is needed. There have been 15 injuries and one death as the result of the 16 crashes that happened between January 2018 and January of this year. The investigation includes all four Tesla models. I'm Brad Siegel.
Brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
Toby Keith has revealed that he's been battling stomach cancer. The country singer took to Facebook Sunday to share with friends and fans that he was diagnosed with the disease last fall. Since then, he's been receiving chemotherapy, radiation, and has undergone surgery. He stated that he needed time to recover, but is looking forward to seeing fans sooner than later. And a North Carolina pest control company has an unusual offer for homeowners around the country. The Pest Informer in Raleigh is offering $2,000 to the brave soul who allows the company to release 100 cockroaches inside their home. The company says it's all in the name of research. I'll pass. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we take you inside the classroom with the good doctor, Ralph Kerr of the Teaching and Learning Institute in beautiful Houghton, New York. And Ralph, a little melancholy this week, our last show of the summer, but Lord willing, we will be back in the fall. And this is a big week in New York. It is Regents Week, something I'm sure those students are looking forward to. We briefly mentioned last week some test-taking tips, but if you would give us a little bit of a refresher on what some of those are.
Well, it is true. This is a really big week, and I hope the students will, in fact, be sure, first of all, that they have studied properly. Obviously, it's hard to take a test that you haven't studied for, and then get enough sleep the night before the test. Listen closely to any instructions that the teacher is giving. Sometimes there's some new information even that's given during the instructional time. And then it's a good plan to read through the test first. You sort of get your mind in gear and also see the breadth of what the questions are going to be. And then once you've done that, go back and focus on addressing each question individually. Think about how you're going to answer and then put that answer down. And then try to relax. I mean, it's easy for me to say to you, try to relax, because we're not taking the test.
Yeah.
But certainly if you've prepared properly, you should be fine. And then finally, don't be in a rush. You've got time. They tell you how much time you have. And don't be in a rush. Take each question and make sure that you complete the answer.
Yeah. It's been a few years since I've taken one of those tests. What is it, 3 hours they give you? Or is it less?
Okay. And when you hear that sounds like a long time. But if you kind of distribute the time over the questions, 3 hours will pass quickly if you're doing a thorough job.
Yeah, unless it's like sunny and 75 out, the 3 hours.
I was thinking about that when I said read the test thoroughly first. I mean, many of us taking the test would say, how quickly can I get through this so I can get out and do what I'd really like to do today, which is not taking this test.
Yeah, well, it won't be too much longer. School will be out for summer, but what about the fall? That's a big question. I was reading both the magazines that the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association put out, and they were kind of listing what they think are the biggest challenges facing our schools in the coming academic year. But what we want to hear from you, Ralph. What do you think will be the biggest challenges facing schools come the fall?
Well, I think no doubt the first and biggest challenge is going to be helping students and their parents feel that school is going to be a safe place in the fall. Mm. I mean, obviously in the news recently, we've had all these incidents at schools, so that's going to be a big factor. Then from the teachers and administrators' point of view, there are so many different family factors that are involving students now. You know, students are, their parents are going through divorce. Some of the students are dealing with what's it like to live in poverty. And for many of them now, you don't have to be in poverty. It's just how do you deal with, $5 or $6 to put gas in your tank?
Yeah, that's a big one.
And then, the issues with single parents and violence itself. Then the other thing I would say is that with all that's going on in our life today, students have, I think, are having a lot of difficulty seeing, you know, what's the point of even going to school? So what's the value of education? And that's a challenge for teachers to make the instruction interesting enough that students will see the value of education as they learn.
Yeah, we always talk in news about remaining relevant, and that's something we all need to work on, is to stay relevant.
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about learning loss with COVID. You've mentioned on this program a lot about those summer doldrums, and what are some things that parents can do over the summer months so that by the time September rolls around, you know, little Johnny or little Susie aren't too far behind?
Well, one of the big resources that most communities have, even very small communities, have a library. I would certainly encourage parents, particularly of younger children, to use the resources in the library. So, you know, that could be an attractive thing. There are also some interesting ways to encourage math skills. And you'll love this one, Bob. Mm-hmm. How about having them score a baseball game? You can watch one on TV or go to a local game that's going on and teach them how to actually score a ball game, which involves math and computations like that. And then finally, there are lots of educational games that are online. And if parents are, you know, monitoring, which I hope they are, what their children are doing online, they could really engage them through some instructional games as well, which should help with the whole issue of learning loss that happens during the summer. There's no doubt that it does.
Yeah, and one of the things I love, you always say, is take the kids on an educational field trip. We'll be at the 9/11 Museum in New York City this weekend, so I know my son is really looking forward to that and getting some history over
the
summer months.
So, that's a great idea.
If folks have questions about what they've heard on this program or any other issues in education, Ralph, where can they find you?
They can simply go to yrun.org, yrun.org.
Issues in Education airs Mondays during the Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead, where is your Scooby-Doo dream come true?
Looks like we've got another mystery on our hands.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. All is quiet across our region weather-wise now, but we're going to watch a cluster of thunderstorms that will move to parts of the area late tonight, focusing on western and central Pennsylvania. Otherwise, in its wake, warmer air builds into the region. We're heading into the 80s come Wednesday. In the meantime, for this afternoon, sunshine, scattered clouds, and pleasant, behind the 70s and low 80s. For tonight, partly moonlit, but a cluster of heavy thunderstorms and showers will move across the region overnight from southwest New York into western and central Pennsylvania. Low temps, 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow, some sunshine returns, high temps, 70s and low 80s. We're well in the 80s to near 90 on Wednesday with some sunshine, some humidity as well.
All right, thank you, Kevin. And finally at noon.
Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Well, he's in California, or at least that's the home of the real-life replica of the Scooby-Doo gang's famed Mystery Machine. And for fans looking to channel their inner Shaggy or Velma, has Airbnb got a deal for you. To mark the 20th anniversary of the 2002 live-action Scooby-Doo movie, they're offering 3 one-night stays late this month inside of the Mystery Machine parked along the Southern California coast.
Everybody, into the van!
In keeping with the 20 theme, the rent will be just $20. It includes a late-night viewing of the Scooby movie, all-you-can-eat snacks, of course, just like Shaggy and Scooby would want, and a virtual greeting from actor Matthew Lillard, who played Shaggy in the movie. Sounds pretty cool, though personally having to pay $20 to sleep in a van overnight still seems a bit pricey to me. That's the world we live in for Monday, the 13th of June, 2022. Thank you for listening. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.